Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. When a husband is fallen, one's relationship with him must be given up. So all the husbands in the room, listen to this carefully. And all the wives as well. When a husband is fallen, one's relationship with him must be given up. Purport. This is a quotation from the Smriti Shastra, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 11, text 28. Santushta lolupadaksha brahmadnya priya satyavak apramatta shuchi snigda patim tva patitam bhajet. A wife who is satisfied, who is not greedy, who is expert, and knows religious principles, who speaks what is dear and truthful, and is not bewildered, and is always clean and affectionate, should be very much devoted to a husband if he is not fallen. There's a big important if in the original Sanskrit as well. Patitam tu apatitam. Sorry, patim tu apatitam bhajet. Okay. Om adnyanti mirandasya jnana anjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha namaham vishnu padaya krishna prishthaya bhutale shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse is in continuation of the discussion that was going on. Would anyone like to fill us into what the context of this is? Anyone? What is the context in which this verse is being spoken? And who is speaking it? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is speaking this verse. To whom? To his daughter. I think he speaks to his wife. Shathirma. Shathirma, you are a Bengali, so you know. Mother of Shathi. Shathi was the name of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter. And he tells his wife that our daughter should at once give up the association of her husband, Amoga. Why? Because he blasphemed Lord Chaitanya. How did he blaspheme Lord Chaitanya? Criticized his eating so much. It's okay to eat a lot, right? Yes, with the exception that if you're in a certain, you know, it might be okay for certain people to do certain things, but when you are in a position of exemplary authority, you cannot do whimsically what you want to do. And as a sannyasi, he's meant to control his senses and eating. And you know how much food there was that was cooked? How much? A lot. Huh? 108. Did you count them? No. I actually thought I should count them, but I did not. So Lord Chaitanya was in Puri with his associates who had come from Bengal to see him. During the Chaturmas, his Bengali devotees would come and see him in Puri. And as the Chaturmas would be over, they would return to their homes. So Lord Chaitanya was feeling the separation from them. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thought that was the right opportunity to now invite Lord Chaitanya home for prasadam, because he is relieved of the crowds. So we should all know when to take the opportunity to invite seniors. So Lord Chaitanya agreed, but it wasn't easy. Initially, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya invites him to come home and honor prasadam for every day for the entire month. He says, Mahaprabhu, now your devotees are gone back to Bengal. Please accept my invitation and come and honor prasadam for the whole month. What was Mahaprabhu's response? What was his response? Negotiated. What did he negotiate to? Well, Mahaprabhu did not have a response. So he said, okay, at least 15 days. And then they negotiated down. And they settled with 5 days. And then he says, well, so this is 6 a.m. in the morning. Then he says, well, you should come for lunch today itself. So Lord Chaitanya agreed. And he ran home and he told Shati's mother. In Bengal, even now, there is a custom. The husband doesn't call the wife by name. He refers to the wife by the children's, as children's mother. So Shati is the name of the daughter, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter. So she is referred to in Chaitanya Charitamrita as Shatir Mata. Means mother of Shati. We don't know her name actually. So he says, Shatir Mata, come on, let's cook. Mahaprabhu is coming. And she gets really excited and they start cooking. And it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, like a good husband, he cooks with her. So how many of you cook with your wives? Some do, which is good. Others who don't should probably take inspiration from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, such a great scholar. He's a big pandit, but he cooks. So, cooking is also full of rasa. I also like to cook. Every Sunday morning, the Lord is very kind to accept breakfast. So he cooked, and how many items did they cook? Well, some mention 108, others mention 1,000. And Mahaprabhu arrived on the dot at 12 noon. And when Mahaprabhu arrived, he served all the items to Mahaprabhu. Of course, they were all offered to Krishna by then. So not only did he buy the vegetables, chop them, clean them, cook them, offered them, arranged them, all ready for Mahaprabhu to honor them, everything from 6 a.m. to 12 noon. This must be like, you know, they must be super cooks, right? So they somehow managed. And when Mahaprabhu arrived, he was surprised. How did you manage to cook so much? It is mentioned there was 6 pounds, 3 kilos worth of mountain of rice, which was dripping in ghee, golden. There were fried items and boiled vegetables and sweets and cakes. Has anyone tried Channa Poda in Jagannath Puri? That is the original cake. If you go to Jagannath Puri, you should try Channa Poda. It's a cake which is offered to Lord Jagannath. And to top it all up, he also got lots of maha from Jagannath Mandir. And he offered it all to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu, looking at the feast, he said, "This is all for me? One person? How am I to finish this?" And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Well, it's not a big deal for you. You are non-different from Krishna. And you are non-different from Jagannath. As Lord Jagannath, you eat 100 pots 52 times a day. How much is that? And as Krishna, you would eat in the morning, you would have breakfast cooked by your mother in the house of your father, Nanda Maharaj. And then you would be invited by your uncles and your aunts would have cooked for you. How many uncles did he have? Nanda Maharaj has 4 brothers. So after finishing his breakfast at his own home, he goes to his uncle's home for breakfast. And after finishing there, Nanda Maharaj has 2 sisters, Anandini and Nandini. And both of those sisters also invite Krishna for breakfast. So then he goes and has breakfast with them. And then he has lunch with hundreds and thousands of gopas, tasting a little from each one of their boxes. And in the evening when he comes back home, he has dinner again at Nanda Maharaj's house and all his uncle's house and his aunt's house. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is saying this in the verse. He's saying, "Look, you eat so much. You're a feasting lord. So what's this little preparation that we've attempted to make here?" And then he says, "Well, and then in Dwarka, you married 16,000 queens, each one with a separate palace. And you were personally present with each and every one of them simultaneously. And each of them is cooking hundreds and thousands of wonderful items and you're feasting on them. So that's your real capacity. So please, honor." Mahaprabhu's convinced. So he starts honoring. And just then, and actually when Mahaprabhu is honoring Prasadam, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is guarding the door with a stick, ready to pounce on anyone who disrupts or interrupts the feast. Amoga, who is his son-in-law, happens to come by. And he's there just to check on, what is this Lord Chaitanya? Who is this Chaitanya? What is he doing? His intention were evil. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understands that. He guards the door. But somehow, when he's a little inattentive, trying to go and get something from the kitchen, Amoga peeps in and he sees Mahaprabhu surrounded by feast and relishing. Immediately at once, he points finger at Mahaprabhu and says, "You call yourself as a sannyasi? A sannyasi who is a debauchee, who feasts, who cannot control his senses?" Hearing this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is so angry, he immediately raises the stick. Amoga escapes and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya runs behind him. But Amoga disappears. He comes and he falls at the feet of Mahaprabhu and says, "Please forgive me. It seems I invited you just to be dishonored. It's all my fault." Mahaprabhu says, It's all right. He's an amogha, just like your son. A son-in-law is to be treated like a son. Is he not just like your son? You should not think too much about it. And still, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not happy from within. So he continues to beg for forgiveness. And when Mahaprabhu leaves, he tells his wife, "Well, actually, this man, Amogha, doesn't deserve to live. He should be killed. And if he cannot be killed, then I should commit suicide." But then he says, "But the Dharma Shastras say," because he's a scholar after all. A scholar does not just think emotionally. He's going to apply what he knows. So he quickly applies what he knows. He says, "But the scriptures say that a brahmana should not be killed. And Bhagavatam says, even a brahma bandhu, one who's a relative of a brahmana, should not be killed. So although Amogha is a brahma bandhu, his body cannot be touched. And I happen to be born as a brahmana, so I cannot commit suicide. But at that moment, Shati's mother, she says, "Oh, I pray that somehow my daughter becomes a widow." And just at that moment, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, "Yes, you're right. Our daughter should give up her relationship with her husband." And just to support what he's saying, he quotes this. What does he say? "Patim cha patitam tyajet." Patim means a pati, cha, and patitam, one who's fallen, tyajet, deserves to be given up. So he quotes this injunction to his wife. So this is also, because he's a pandit, even in household affairs, he's quoting Shastra to his wife. Well, he's a good pandit. He's a humble pandit. A true pandit is humble, not proud. So, in this way, he wants his daughter to give up the association of her husband. And then you shall see what happens next. How Amogha, due to the effect of his own offense to Mahaprabhu, he contracts cholera. And due to the cholera, he's having uncontrolled vomiting and diarrhea. And he falls so sick that he's about to die. And when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya hears about it, he feels joyful. Yes! And when Mahaprabhu hears about it, he runs to Amogha. And he gives his blessing. Amogha begs forgiveness. Mahaprabhu embraces him. And Amogha is revived to his good health. And then Mahaprabhu goes to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and also kind of pacifies him. So that is the pastime. But I think many instructive points, this particular point, and I would like to dwell on this. Patitam, patim cha patitam tyajet. And in the purport, we find Srila Prabhupada quotes from the 7th canto, chapter 11. 7th canto, chapter 11 talks about Narad Muni's instructions to Yudhishthir Maharaj about how grihasthas should lead their lives. Everyone who is a grihastha or who is planning to be a grihastha, actually, there's also instructions for brahmacharis and sannyasis in that section, but especially for grihasthas. We should read that and meditate. And in this particular verse, Narad Muni is telling Yudhishthira Maharaj, what are the qualities of a good wife? There are 8 qualities of a good wife. I can see some of the men are smiling and eagerly taking notes. But wait till the last 2 words. Okay, so the good qualities in a wife. First, santushta. She's always satisfied with whatever she is given, whatever the capacity of the husband is, not always demanding, give me more, give me more. One sari is not enough. His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj once told me that his father, who was a big lawyer, actually he was a lawyer for the President of America, and he once, you know, there was a birthday party of his sister, Giriraj Maharaj's sister, when they were young. And his sister was taking too long to come out from her room. So the father went to ask, what's going on? And she was sobbing, crying. And the father inquired, what's wrong? Is everything okay? It's your birthday today and you seem so unsettled. And she said, oh, Dad, I just don't have the right pair of shoes to wear. And then Giriraj Maharaj said, she had 3,000 pairs, but she couldn't find the right one for her birthday. So sometimes, well, men, women, it's, by the way, in Kali Yuga, you know, men can act like womanly and women can act manly, and, you know, there's fluid genders and all kinds of things. I mean, I heard someone tell me that there's a fluid gender, so you could be men in the afternoon and women in the evening, and before you sleep you can be men. I mean, all kinds of things are going on. I've got no opinion about it because I never felt like that, so I don't know what it's like to feel like that. So, but all these qualities have to be exemplified in men as well, by the way. Santushta. In female, santushta, which means always satisfied. Second, alolupa. Alolupa means one who is not greedy or envious about what the others possess. So she is happy with what she has. She does not envy the neighbor's wife. Third, daksha. She's an expert in managing all the affairs of the household. Tradition. The tradition is, whatever the man earns, 100% is given to the wife. Yes. And she's the one who decides how the money will be used. So the men should learn that too. Dharmadnya. She knows what is dharma. Especially, she does not make demands which are against dharma. We all know what happened when Diti demanded to unite with her husband at the wrong time, and the demons were born. So dharma, knowing dharma. So women are not uneducated. Otherwise the word nya would be meaningless. Can you go to the verse, please? The Sanskrit, dharmadnya, knower of dharma. The word dharmadnya would be meaningless if they were not educated. Oh, it's in the purport, sorry. It's that one there, stop there. Dharmadnya. The women were educated in dharma, learned. Priya Satyavak. Wives, because they are so close to their husband, the husband may be treated with lot of respect elsewhere. But at home, they get the real taste of who they are. Yes, because the wife can be pretty direct. Shastras say, please be direct, but be a little sweet. Priya, it says, Priya Satyavak, not just Satyavak. People think you're a great scholar, but you're just a fool. Well, not like that. You know, you could say, well, people think you're a great scholar, but in my transactions, I deem you to be like a fool sometimes. You know, just soften the blow. Next, apramatta. Apramatta means she's not bewildered about her duties. She's not lazy. Pramatta means lazy. Shuchihi, she's clean. Snigdha, and she's affectionate towards her husband. These are the eight qualities of a wife. But then these qualities have to be exhibited by the wife only if the last line is fulfilled, which is very important. Patim, the husband, too, must indeed be apatitam, must indeed be not fallen, bhajet. Then you can exhibit these qualities. Otherwise, you should have nothing to do with him. Otherwise, that's confirmation. You can have nothing to do with him. So the men have a lot to prove, to become deserving, first, and then deserve. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was once speaking, and he said, men want to be, they want a wife who is chaste, beautiful, attractive, eager to serve, just like Mother Sita. But they don't want to become like Lord Rama. So, you know, it doesn't work that way. What is the duty of the husband? What is the prime duty of the husband? Anyone? Men or women? Huh? Give protection? Okay. Huh? Maintain the household? Yes. Spiritually elevated? Yes. So Rishabhdev had 100 sons, all of whom were to get married, or meant to get married. They did not, all of them did not, but they were meant to get married. And he instructs in the 5th canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 5, very instructive, verse number 18, 5:18. It is mentioned that these 6 personalities, roles rather, have a huge burden to carry. The verse says, Gurur na sasyat. One should not become a guru. Swajano na sasyat. One should not become a brother, a well-wisher, a friend, a family member. Pita na sasyat. One should not become a father. Janani na sasyat. One should not be a mother. Daivim Natatsyat, one should not become a worshipable deity or a lord. Napatish chasasyat, neither should one become a husband. Neither should one become a husband if namo chayet yaha samupetamrityum. Samupetamrityum. Mrityu means death. Samupeta means when it comes face to face. When one comes face to face with death, if one is not able to guarantee that you've given enough ammunition to your dependents to deal with death. If you have, then you are worthy to become a demigod, a father, a mother, a well-wisher, a guru. If you are not, if you have not equipped, if you have not given your dependence, Krishna consciousness, you are not worthy to be a father. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reads differently. Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha, this is the reading that he gives, the one that I just mentioned. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also gives an alternative reading. He says, even if one is approached to become a husband, even if one is approached to become a guru, even if one is approached to become a guide, even if one thinks of becoming a father, thinks of becoming a mother, one should restrain oneself if they cannot guarantee that their dependents will be given access to spiritual life. Just to be clear, the role of these individuals is to provide the access. Whether the dependents will become devotees or not, it's down to their own endeavor, free will, and karma. But our duty should be. Otherwise, guru can be given up. We have the example of guru being given up. In the 8th canto, chapter 23, we have the example of Bali Maharaj. Shukracharya, the guru, he says, Bali, you're being fooled by this little boy who's none other than your arch enemy, Vishnu. Bali says, enemy, Vishnu? My forefathers, Prahlad, he worshipped Vishnu. Shukracharya says, well, he's just going to usurp your entire kingdom, all the three worlds. He'll take everything from you. Bali says, if it's Vishnu indeed who has come in this form, then I surrender to him and I give up you as my guru. So guru can be given up if the guru cannot guarantee bringing one closer to Krishna. Swajano na sasyat. Swajana, one's own family members can be given up. Vibhishan, when he was with Ravana, he was his dear brother. Actually, between Kumbhakarna, I forget the name, there's one more brother, and Vibhishan. Vibhishan was the dearest brother of Ravana. And yet, Vibhishan gave him up. Swajana should be given up if the Swajana is fallen. What is the definition of fallen? Srila Prabhupada says in the purport to the previous verse, Prabhupada says, one who does not follow the four regulatory principles is fallen. That's a tall order. One who does not follow the four regulatory principles. But we will see this, if time permits, we will see it in proper context. Pita, father, can be given up. We have Prahlad Maharaj giving up his own father, Hiranyakashipu. What is next? Janani, mother, can be given up. We have Bharat giving up his mother, Kaikeyi, who wants him to become the king of Ayodhya. And he says, well, you're coming between my service to Ramchandra, so I'd rather give you up as my mother. Daivam. Daivam means being a demigod can be given up. We have in the 9th chapter, a beautiful pastime of Khatwanga Maharaj, who was commissioned by Indra. Indra was fighting the demons and he did not have enough strength. His demigod army had not enough strength. So he had to commission Khatvanga, who was ruling the earth, to come and fight with him. And Khatvanga Maharaj fought with Indra, pushed back the demons. And at the end, Khatvanga Maharaj was talking to Indra. Indra said, "What would you like as a boon? I can give you whatever blessing you want." And Khatvanga Maharaj said, "Well, before you give me any blessing, tell me how long do I have to live?" And Indra says, so the demigods, they can see the past and future and present. We can only see the past and the present, right? Well, some of you might be able to see your future, but actually all our futures are bright. As long as we are connected to Srila Prabhupada's movement, so we know what our future is. Anyway, so Khatvanga Maharaj said, "How long do I have to live?" And what did Indra say? "You have one muhurta, approximately 42 minutes to live." Khatvanga Maharaj said, "You keep your boon with yourself, I'm going down." He came down in that 42 minutes, he came down to earth, he gave up his kingdom to his children, he walked away from his kingdom as if, giving it away, as if it was stool. You know, when you do your morning job, evening job, whatever, you know, you might be going to the toilet. Ayurveda says if your stomach works like it normally should, you'd only go. It says a yogi goes to pass stool once a day. A bogi goes twice. And a rogi goes more than three times. Bogi means one who is indulgent. A rogi means one who is diseased. He passes stool more than three times. Anyway, whatever, I don't want the number, but I want to drive a point. When you pass stool, how fascinated do you feel by what you've lost from your body? How attached do you feel? How much do you crave and cry for that departed stool? Not at all, right? That's how Khatvanga Maharaj gave up his kingdom, as if it was just stool. I couldn't even care less, think about it. This was his detachment, and he meditated on Vishnu and he went back to Godhead. He gave up Daiva, he gave up Indra. So if demigods cannot take you closer to Krishna, they are worth giving up. Patishcha sasyat, husband can be given up. We have the example in 10th canto. Oh, actually, two examples. Now, four examples. Yeah. Oh, you can do a crescendo of examples. 10th canto. Quiz, can you tell me examples, 10th canto, of wives who gave up their husbands? That's chapter 23, isn't it? Huh? Dharma Patnis. Yeah, yeah, so that's chapter 23, but before that. Yeah. Kaliya's wives. What did Kaliya's wives do? Kaliya was sleeping and they were fanning him and they wanted to make sure that he does not wake up. Whenever he wakes up, he creates havoc. Yeah? But when Krishna came, they actually, for those moments, stopped fanning Kaliya. And what did they do? Huh? Yeah, they prayed to Krishna. Their attention was diverted from Kaliya to Krishna. What chapter is that? 10th canto, chapter 9, I think. Chapter 9. And then chapter 23 is Brahma Patnis. And then you can go crescendo. You can go all the way to the highest who left their husbands, the gopis. Yeah? You know, the Rasa Pancha Adhyayi. The Rasa Pancha Adhyayi is all about how the gopis only saw Krishna as their real husband. So we see that many examples of being given up. And anyway, there's a lot to be said. I will skip most of it and go to something practical. One thing, one should not give up one's husband or one's wife for petty matters. Oh, I don't like him anymore because he snores too much. I don't like her anymore because, you know, now that we have kids, she's just looking after the kids and whatever the kids want. And I'm like the second or the third class citizen in the house. It'll happen when you have children. Experience tells me. It happens. Because, you know, children have to be looked after. You gotta learn to live. When you were my only beloved, not sharing my love with anyone, you were cooking for me. I had a different variety of gulab jamun every week. And here I am now with, two kids, and all you want is to serve them. It's how things happen. So these are petty things. So Srila Prabhupada quotes Chanakya Pandit, and he says, Rishi Shraddhe, this is a beautiful verse, Rishi Shraddhe Aja Yuddhe Prabhate Megha Garjane Dampatya Kalahe Chaiva Bahavarambhe Lagu Kriya. Bahavarambhe, it starts like a great pomp and commotion. But actually it is Lagu Kriya. It is just an insignificant matter. What starts with great commotion? These four things start with a great commotion. Number one, Rishi Shraddha. Rishi Shraddha means some sage dies in the forest. And everyone says, oh, this Babaji, this Rishi has passed away. We have to go for a Shraddha. But when you actually go there, you have to sit on the floor. There is no prasadam. There is only a cup of Gangajal. There is no great yajna. It's only a little kirtan. But it starts as if, oh, it's like a big thing. Next, Ajayuddhe. There are two goats, two rams actually, male goats, in the middle of the marketplace. They both go on a head-on collision, like a big commotion, you know. And then some passerby who is going, the goats are like fighting. Passerby says, hut! Prabhupada explains like this. The goats are fighting and the passerby says, hut! And the goats, go away, run away. It's not a big thing, the goats fighting. Prabhate megha garjane. Early morning, the sky rumbles as if it's going to break apart and pour torrential rains. But early morning, sky rumbling never results in torrential rains. It's not a big deal. And the last one is dampatye kalahe chaiva. Dampatye. In a married life, husband and wife are fighting. I don't want to be with you anymore. But then, after 1 hour, they're together. I learned this through practical experience that don't take it too seriously. Yeah? And also, I learned even another lesson. When my kids would have a fight, one of my child is in this room, when they would have fight between them, both my children, me and my wife would take sides on who we thought was the right. You know, I think my daughter was a little bit more right than my son, or my son was the right one, and we would take his side. And when we would take one side, the other would become really furious on us. And then after an hour, they both are playing together, and we are the bad guys. So, you know, we learned, actually, let them fight. Because it doesn't last. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. My daughter would tell me, I'm not your best friend anymore. And in 2 minutes, she'll come back, say, Daddy, can I have this from you? These matters, one has to learn that not everything is so serious, that we become really sort of, you know, too much into, we need to learn how to let go in grihastha life. Yet, I do want to say this, because this is important and something practical you can adopt in your life. From the example of Vibhishan, please listen carefully. There are 6 practical steps given by the commentators of the Ramayana. 6 practical steps on how to deal with a guru that you want to give up, a brother you want to give up, or a sister you want to give up, or a father you want to give up, or a mother you want to give up, or a husband you want to give up. Because they are not helping you with your spiritual life. You don't just give them up whimsically. One day, walk away. No. There are 6 steps. Step number 1. First and foremost, please, if you are in a relationship, and I speak to all the mothers here, all the ladies here, please acknowledge, start with acknowledging, first step, acknowledging the reality that actually there's something wrong in this relationship. It's very one-sided. It's not satisfying. Open your eyes to the truth. Vibhishan, first thing, when he was in the court, and Ravana came and he said, now I have the personified goddess of fortune in my possession. This Sita, she's so attractive and she shall be mine. Immediately, Vibhishan, first thing, he acknowledged, there's something wrong here. This is adharma. What Ravana is thinking is adharma. So, in any relationship, the first step is to open our eyes and not continue to be oppressed, suppressed, depressed. Prabhupada used these words. He said, my godbrothers only gave me oppression, suppression, depression. Of course, he said it in some context, so we should not use this to offend his godbrothers who are great saintly personalities themselves. So please do not take these words to mean that we can have a free license to talk about Prabhupada's godbrothers. But in a context he had said this. My point is, the oppression, suppression and depression that we go through, acknowledge it. Open your eyes to it. If your relationship is not healthy, Vibhishan acknowledged. Second step, create boundaries in your relationship so that you no longer are subjected to the violence of that relationship. The next step that Vibhishan did was He created the boundary by completely not responding to Ravana's seeking of approval. In the court, whenever Ravana wanted to seek an approval from his ministers, and Vibhishan was his favorite brother, he would sit on his right-hand side. He was literally Ravana's right-hand man. And yet, Vibhishan said, "My dear brother, I have created the boundary. I shall not support your call for approval of adharma." Like, for instance, where he said Hanuman should be burnt alive. Vibhishan said, "No, I cannot approve it." Like he said, "We should attack Ayodhya proactively." Vibhishan said, "I cannot approve it." He said, "I will forcibly marry Sita, even though she does not want me." Vibhishan said, "I cannot approve it." He set boundaries. So first step, acknowledge it. Acknowledge the problem. Second, create your boundaries. Third, harmonize through communication. And we see that in case of Vibhishan, he tried to harmonize by getting counselors involved. So there were some ministers like Anala, Panasa, Sampati, Pramathi. There were elders like Malyavan. There was his sister-in-law, Mandodari, the wife of Ravana. There was his own wife, Sarama. And in fact, there were some commoners, common demons, like Trijata. Have you heard of Trijata? When Sita Devi was in Ashoka Vatika, where she was kept by Ravana, she had an attendant by the name of Trijata. She was a beautiful, well, standards of beauty are, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. So she had three heads and three buns of hair on each one of the head. So she was known as Trijata. But she was pretty by the demon standards. And she was very learned, very educated. So Trijata also advised Ravana. Malyavana advised Ravana. Malyavana is his grandfather, Ravana's. He advised Ravana, "What you're doing is wrong." Mandodari advised him. Sarama, the wife of Vibhishan, advised him. Panasa, Anala, all these ministers, they advised him. So the next step is to try to harmonize the relationship through communication. "My dear husband, you're not really acting in the character that you portray in front of others. You're not really acting in your own, for your own spiritual welfare." You communicate, try and harmonize through communication. Next, if that doesn't work, remain anchored in your own bhakti, in your own devotion. And we see that Vibhishan, he said, "I don't need to attend your court anymore. I will just continue." Hari Bol, welcome. Vibhishan said, I won't attend your court anymore, Ravana. I do not wish to support you." So he start to become aloof. And finally, he reached out for support. He sent a message to Ramchandra, I cannot live here anymore. Even us, even the women, you don't have to suffer silently. Many a times women and men suffer silently, alone. It doesn't have to be that way. Actually, I mentioned Trijata. It reminds me that even Mother Sita, she was in the custody of Ravana, surrounded by demons, had no idea of what was happening outside of that closed arena of Ashoka Vatika, had no idea of how many years had passed or how many millennia must have passed, because she had no sense of time. She was practically living like a stone, suffering. And she could only feel the suffering because she was thinking, how much is my dear Ram suffering in my separation? And in that suffering, she was not alone. I think this is a very important point. She confided in Trijata, who was her constant companion. If you read Valmiki Ramayana, you will see Trijata was always supportive of Sita. And Trijata was the one who said, I have a strong sense that your Ram will come and personally take you back. So we need that reaching out for support, not to suffer alone. And finally, one must act with clarity, that Vibhishan had. When he saw that everything else failed and nothing else was possible, he gently, consciously, considerately walked away from the kingdom of Ravana. And with him walked away the very last straw of piety that existed in the kingdom of Ravana. You see, Ramchandra was almost on the cusp of entering Lanka, but for some reason he did not advise the monkey army and his soldiers and the bear army to attack Lanka, as if he was waiting for something, some signal. And when Vibhishan left Lanka and joined Ramchandra, Lord Ramchandra said, now, that one Vibhishan, that one devotee Vibhishan, was keeping the entire Lanka together. That Lanka could not be penetrated because it had one devotee Vibhishan. Now that he has left Lanka, Lanka, all its guards are down. So Ramchandra said, now we attack Lanka. This is the power of one devotee. So, but he walked away when nothing worked. So these six steps: acknowledge the reality in your relationship, create the boundaries and see if that works. If not, try and harmonize through communications. If that fails, remain anchored in your own bhakti. If still things are difficult, reach out for support. Do not suffer alone. And finally, act with clarity. Srila Prabhupada told some of his disciples who wanted to separate. Prabhupada said, live separately. Do not get married again. That was Prabhupada's principle. You know, Prabhupada also said, marriage is like Dilli ka laddu. You know what that is? Who knows what is Dilli ka laddu? Yeah? What is Dilli ka laddu? Yes, it's a, It's a very special laddu. You must try if you haven't tried. Prabhupada said, so I'll explain, a dillika laddu is this big. It's made from pure ghee mixed with dry fruits, pistachios and almonds and cashews and all kinds of nuts and cardamom and saffron. And I mean, it's the ultimate thing in mouth-watery sweet that you will ever taste. And it's big. When you see it, the fragrance, the sight of it, everything is so attractive. Srila Prabhupada said, marriage is like dilli ka laddu. One who eats it regrets. One who doesn't eat it also regrets. Because if you don't eat that laddu, you're like, oh, I'm missing out. But if you eat it, you will be frequenting the toilet for many days. Because you won't be able to digest. Only some few people can digest the dillika laddu. Few people can digest married life. The rest lay slain in the battlefield of life. Yeah. So it's true. But the reality is, once you've tasted it differently, you won't taste it again, right? So Srila Prabhupada said, well, if you've had a failed marriage, you've walked away, you've done all these steps, you've tried to save the relationship, it's just not happened, then don't go back again. This is indication, you do your bhakti in your own way. I mean, there are times where Prabhupada, there's a letter that somebody sent to Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I don't like my wife anymore. He was just married like 6 months back. He said, I don't like my wife anymore. She is, you know, she's too ambitious in her devotional life and I can't cope with her. And we just don't get along. We have no love for each other. So please give me your blessing and your permission to divorce her. By the way, I've already looked at another pretty bird whom I am considering. So please, at the same time, give me blessing to remarry this other lady. So Srila Prabhupada was getting massaged by Shruta Kirti Prabhu. And just the previous night, when he had the letter, Prabhupada would dictate the letters, the responses. And he dictated, you may divorce her and both of you may continue in your devotional service. Like that, Prabhupada dictated. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu was just bewildered. How? Oh, Prabhupada never, you know, likes to approve divorces. I mean, he's never done it. He's in public forums, in his letters, in his books. He never says that you should divorce. Why? And then Shruta Kirti Prabhu asked Srila Prabhupada while he was massaging Prabhupada, Prabhupada, yesterday, you know, that letter you dictated asking you for divorce? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, I approved it. And yes, Prabhupada, why? I mean, I'm bewildered, Shruta Kirti Prabhu said. Srila Prabhupada said, what can I do? This is the law of your country. Divorces are allowed. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu wasn't satisfied with the answer. So Shruta Kirti Prabhu said, no, but Prabhupada, yes, divorces are allowed, but, you know, it's not appropriate. That's what you've taught us. Srila Prabhupada said, well, you're right. However, I know if I don't approve it, he will still divorce her. And he'll still marry this other girl. But he would also get the sin of not following the instruction of his spiritual master. So by approving it, at least he will not get that sin. So Srila Prabhupada personally knew the heart of his disciple, and as an exception, he made some approvals. But generally, what he made as an approval for an individual cannot be applied to everyone. For us, we should rely on Srila Prabhupada's books, his lectures, his letters, communications, morning walks. And the principle is, one should try to salvage one's relationship in the steps that I mentioned. And if it doesn't work, then go back to that verse, please. That's where we end. Go back to that verse, right? Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 15, text 265. CC Madhya 15.265. Then all the ladies can sing this verse. Oh, he's still finding it. That's it. That's it. All right, ladies. What is the next step if you've done everything? Patimcha patitam tyajet. Then, if there's complete hopelessness, then such a fallen husband should be, must be given up. And yet, one should be open. If the person changes and comes back, one could remain open. All right, I am open now for any comments, criticisms, challenging questions. What a topic! I was actually going to back out of this topic, and I was told if I backed out, then they would ask one of our brahmacharis to speak on this topic. And I felt quite a pity for a brahmachari to speak. And somebody suggested Srinivas Prabhu's name, and I'm sure he does a wonderful job, but, you know, he's too dear to me for me to throw him in front of the lions. So, anyway, any comments, corrections? I'll take the ladies.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu, thank you so much for your class. My question is regarding, I see contradictory, because you said, the husbands, so they should provide for, not they should provide, but they should. How can someone guarantee that someone else is going back to Godhead if the choice doesn't lie in their hands?
Yes.
So how the guarantee could be there? So that was my...
Yeah, so the scriptures are very clear. The husband, the wife, the father, the mother, sorry, not the wife, the husband, if you see that verse, Canto 5, Chapter 5, text number 18, instruction of Rishabhdev to his 100 sons, there is no mention of wife. Wife is excluded from this particular verse. But the husband, the father, mother, etc., what is required is that they should make provision for their dependents to be able to face death. And that provision is made by giving them introduction to spiritual life. That's the only guarantee they have to give. They have to facilitate that. And whether they become devotees or not, that's completely up to the free will of that individual, the karma that they possess. We can't guarantee. Nobody can guarantee.
So the guarantee is actually making sure that they are exposed to that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Now I understand.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I'll come to you.
Yeah. Gurgudvinda Swami, he said, household life, grihastha, is greater than sannyas. The tapasya is so much greater.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, like Dhammakrishna Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada once told Dhammakrishna Maharaj, we all know this. He said, so in our society, all women should be married and all men should be brahmacharis. So, I mean, and Dhammakrishna Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, how is that possible, Srila Prabhupada? All men are brahmacharis and all women are married? So, Srila Prabhupada didn't answer that, almost as if telling him, you figure that out. He didn't answer. And I asked Dhammakrishna Maharaj in 1995, August, I asked Dhammakrishna Maharaj, Maharaj, it was like a one-to-one discussion, and I asked Maharaj, did you ever find the answer from Prabhupada about that? And he said, no, he never answered that. I asked him on two different occasions. He didn't answer, almost, you know, wanting me to figure it out. But by reading his books, I figured it out. And I said, what is it? And he looked at me and he said, I'm getting late. You go and figure it out. So I said, no, this can't be. You're playing on me. So I was young. I was a young boy, teenager. So I was like, no, Maharaj, I'm not going to. Next day, I asked him the same question. He said, every man should remain a brahmachari in his grihastha life by following all the things that a brahmachari does and only associating with his wife for the purpose of producing, procreating Krishna-conscious children. In that way, Srila Prabhupada had actually written in his books, these are grihastha sannyasis. They are sannyasis. They are brahmacharis. And the women are all married. So that's Dhammakrishna Maharaj's explanation of how. But yes, you're right. Grihastha life is more, more difficult than any other life. I mean, you find sannyasis and brahmacharis with the latest gadgets and flying in the best, whatever, big cars and all kinds of, you know. And then you have the poor grihasthas trying to, you know, drive in cars which are 20, 30 year old. And there's some disparity, but then I think it's worth it. Anyway, that's another topic. Controversial. Incomplete. I'll leave it for later discussion. Yes, Prabhu. And after him, one last question, we'll stop. Yeah. Mike.
Your class, you were summarizing the pastime of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya with the prasadam, and he was offering, and Lord Chaitanya was saying it's a lot, and you said, no, because you get so many offerings. So what wasn't clear for me, if Lord Chaitanya wasn't being recognized as Krishna, how was he sitting with those justifications as to why he should be able to take so much prasadam, if that makes any sense?
Yeah. So privately, he did acknowledge his original personality as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
He did.
Privately, yes. It was only publicly and in the presence of several others that he would sometimes close his ears and say, Vishnu, 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 if somebody would glorify him as Krishna. But privately, with his intimate associates, with Swarup Damodar, with Rupan Sanatan, with Kashishwar Mishra, with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he would, just like when he was in Navadvip, behind closed doors of Sri Vasangan, Mahaprabhu revealed his real self, and he revealed the original personalities of his associates also. So intimately, yes, he did acknowledge, he did agree, he did. So this is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the same chapter, if you read. Verse number, if you read from 198 onwards, My memory is not reliable, so you do your own research. But it's this chapter 15.265, so 15.198 onwards must be. You'll see that Mahaprabhu actually agrees. So he acknowledged, but only in intimate setting. And we find that not just at this instance, we'll find it in later instances and previous instances also. So in the Adi, Madhya and Antya, all three. Like, for example, Rupa Goswami writes that verse and leaves it in the top of the roof, you know. And Mahaprabhu says, "Hey, Rupa, how did you figure out what my intention was of singing the song of a mundane lover in front of Jagannath?" And Rupa Goswami says, "Well, this is who you really are, in the mood of Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna." And he acknowledges. So, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. One last question before. Any ladies, any criticisms or anything you want to, you know, I'll just fold my hands and accept it. This is your opportunity. No? Okay. Mothers are always kind. Women generally are kinder than men. More forgiving, kinder. Except if you're a daughter. Yes.
Hi, Krishna. So far, nearly all the senior women I have met who are married display all these qualities. But I have so far not met one unmarried woman who displays all those qualities. So I imagine it's the same way around for women when they look at men. So how does one stay tolerant in marriage until the other partner acquires all the respective qualities?
Oh, so it's a long question. He hasn't found anyone who has these qualities that are identified there. And maybe you're looking for one?
No. I'm saying, like, every woman who is married, and I imagine every man who is married, most of
they least, have these qualities.
They display these qualities.
Yeah, but not so before they're married.
Yeah, so there must be some tolerance.
Yeah, that's right.
Of each other.
I was in Chicago attending a, you know, mock fight game between. So I had a friend who was, you know, boxing. He was into boxing, and then this was just like a practice fight. But real, with real gloves and sort of, you know, people putting, yeah. So he was in the ring, and before he went in the ring, I said, "Well, how do you actually train yourself to accept these blows?" I mean, your question is something similar. How do you train yourself to accept these blows? And he just said, "Well, you jump into the ring the first time, and you just expect it. And then once you start getting hit, you find your feet every time somehow. You'll fall, but you find your feet. And again, you fall, you find your feet." So, I mean, it's a bit of that. You have to experience it. Like, you could theoretically say, "Well, how do I swim by reading a book?" Well, you could try. We'll drop you in the middle of the English Channel after you've read the book. You memorized it. But you drown, most likely. How do you learn how to swim? By just swimming. How do you get into a relationship and try and work on these qualities? By just getting into the relationship and working on them. I don't think there is any magic. And if anyone gives you some sort of a magical advice, you do this, this, and this, and I'll be you all set. Or please come and tell me, because I'll try and use it. I haven't found anything. But honestly, shastras are very clear. With every samskara and vivaha samskara, in the vows, you take these vows with a view that these will be constant reminders. I'm not there yet, but I'm taking this vow so that it's a constant reminder for me to act in that way. So that's the way that's why the samskaras are important. And then you just kind of, you build your muscles as you go along, kind of a thing. Thank you very much. Yes. So just, I'm over time now. Yeah.
The wife and
should
the children.
Facilitate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I expose.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean forcing them? Because
no.
I've seen.
No.
I've seen a lot of force
any kind of
on
force,
that. Yeah.
Any kind of sort of, you know, overpowering is. That's not what is needed. I think that's naivety. That's being very naive. Why would you force your wife to do anything? Anything, forget.
Or children,
to force them to do anything. You'll gain nothing but a lot of contempt from the wife and children if you force them. The way is the way of love. The way is the way of example. Show by example. The way is not the way of pointing finger. You do it. That never works. Well, that's my experience anyway. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samvet Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Haribol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.